This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade out there. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So when you're growing up and you're in elementary school and you're in high school, I know a lot of times in gym class you got to take these national physical fitness tests, and it's got all sorts of things. It's got the mile run, it's got sit-ups, and it's got like the V-sit reach, if you remember what that is, which just apparently measures flexibility, and I don't really know how that became a thing on the athletic measurement scale. But one of the things, or one of the measurements, I should say, and it often is the one that kind of gives you the most trouble, are pull-ups. And I know for me, even in 2016, if I do like 10 pull-ups, and even that's probably a stretch, but if I do a handful of pull-ups when I'm doing the gym and I'm a back day or something, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
If I get to five,
yeah,
I feel good about
myself. I think five's realistically a better gauge of our abilities. But
pull-ups are hard, man.
Yeah.
They're unusually difficult.
Yeah, definitely hard. You know, a great workout, absolutely. You know, you're in pretty good shape. You can do a lot of them.
I know people that can't do one.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There were, you know, when you took those tests as a kid, a lot of times what they do is they let you hang there. And if you're able to hang yourself, like, you know, put your chin above the bar and hold tight. And if you could hold tight for, you know, 10 seconds, that'd be the equivalent of doing one pull-up, for example. But anyway, that's not the point. We're neither here nor there. You know, a lot of times at work, Tim and I, we're on Twitter, we're on the internets, and we found a world record, and it is just absolutely outrageous. There is a 17-year-old kid who has broke the world record for the most pull-ups in a single day, in a 24-hour period. He did over 7,300 of them.
That's more than 6,900.
That is more than 6,900.
All right.
Just how is my question.
Well, did you see a picture of this kid?
No.
Because I feel like in order to do 7,300 pull-ups, you would have to have the biggest arms that anybody has ever seen in their life.
Absolutely. But I feel like this kid's probably smaller, though, if that makes sense.
Right, because you have to pick yourself up. Like pull-ups are really hard for heavy people, even if they're strong.
Yeah, look, like, the world's strongest man athletes are, like, let's say an NFL offensive lineman. Like, you're talking about some of the strongest dudes in the world, but there's no way a big 300-pound lineman is doing 7,300 pull-ups. I don't care how strong you are.
Well, this kid should be in the military. And also, you said he broke the record with 7,300. I wonder, did someone else do 7,299?
I don't think so. I think this kid probably just, you know, said, hey, F your record. I'm going for everything. And I'm just making some unbeatable record. I think his arms may be made of actual steel.
You've seen the hot dog contest and everything, right?
Yeah,
hot
yeah.
Hot dog contest.
It's Fourth of July tradition.
Yeah, it's always the skinny guys that win.
Oh, yeah.
Because their stomachs expand more.
Dude, there's a restaurant back home. Shout out to Anne Marie's in Royersford, Pennsylvania. They have this pancake challenge. And I'm telling you, Tim, the pancake is as big as your plate. It's absolutely ginormous. For context, the most I've ever eaten is like 3/4 of one. I probably could do one on a good day. But the challenge is, if you eat three of them, you get it for free. Up until my senior year of high school, no woman had ever completed it. There were a few people, and I mean a few people that did it, but no woman had ever completed it. And the chick that beat it, I actually graduated with, she was probably 90 pounds.
Did she get her picture up on the wall?
I don't think they give your picture up on the wall.
I mean, that's all. I've gone into restaurants where they've done that before, and it's always something like really nasty. That like there was this place in Tucson actually called Lindy's that was on anyway,
Man vs. Food.
Man vs. Food, yeah, and they did a burger challenge, and it was like 17 patties or something that was in this burger. But if you could eat it, you'd get it for free. Anyway, the whole reason I would want to do is because a lot of these places will put your picture on the wall.
Yeah.
And honestly, when you're our age, we don't get our picture on the wall for a lot of things.
No, we don't.
Except for mugshots.
Yeah, and we're trying to avoid that at all costs. So, there are some disgusting things on Man vs. Food. There was one where it was like on top of eating a pound and a half of fries and a 3-pound burger, you had to drink like a gallon and a half milkshake. And I'm just like the milkshake takes to a whole other level. Do you know?
Wouldn't you puke? Because when you drink so much milk, you puke.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's the gallon challenge or whatever. I'm pretty sure you can't drink a gallon of milk at once. I don't really want to try to find out, though.
I don't drink milk.
Yeah, I don't really either. I made the switch to almond milk.
Mm-hmm. My entire life, I've never really drank milk. So part of the reason I'm skinny, so there's that phrase, I'm big-boned for fat people, right? Well, the same definitely holds true for skinny people. I'm thin-boned, which is a lot of the reason why I'm thin, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I don't drink milk. It's the only thing we drink, and you and I have had this discussion before, but it's the only thing we drink that comes out of something else's stomach, and I just find that absolutely disgusting. Like, to me, it's like drinking urine.
You think of everything that people drink, that's the one that really disgusts you? If you think about where a lot of food goes, like, do you know what's in a hot dog? You love hot dogs.
I do love hot dogs. Also, corn dogs, super underrated lunch food.
You know what I hope that isn't underrated? This show, the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfus. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzar. Where's Justin?
I don't know. He's not here. So I feel like because he's not here, it is going to be overrated.
You think?
Yeah. The show's definitely better with three people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's always better with three people. But where is he? Yeah, it turns out Justin, I'm pretty sure he's talked about on the show before. Every Sunday, Justin loves to go to this event in St. Augustine called Reggae Sunday.
It's awful.
I've never been personally. But Justin is really trying to get in touch. He wants to really understand reggae. So he just rented a boat and decided to sail to Jamaica.
Good for Justin. You know, I'm surprised he didn't go to Cuba. There's
Why?
A lot, because there's a lot of reggae in Cuba.
Is there?
Yeah, it's a thing.
I don't think it is.
I'm pretty sure it is.
No, Jamaica, you know, is the home. Cuba's got
Fidel Castro's from. Was really into Bob Marley.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite the fun fact.
I mean, you like hip hop.
I do like hip hop. I don't really know how they correlate, and I think that part of my like is accurate, while Fidel Castro's may not be. But that's fine.
Okay.
The U.S. may start having flights to Cuba soon. I'm actually pretty excited about that. I really want to go to Cuba.
From Jacksonville too.
Yeah, direct. And my brother actually went to Cuba even before the embargo broke, and he loved it. He said it was absolutely fantastic. I'd really love to get down there.
Cuban food's really good.
Yeah, it is. Cuban food is great.
So this is a part of the show where we would like to give you guys a shout out for leaving us a review on iTunes. Also, before we move off of this, you can always go to drivenditchpodcast.com, and there's a contact thing where you can send us an email. And I've received a couple of different emails this week from listeners with some really cool show ideas that we aren't going to go into on this show because I want to wait till Justin's around. But you guys keep doing that. Drivenditchpodcast.com and click the contact button and send us an email.
Absolutely. But in the meantime, we got a review from Australia. Ironically, the title of the review is Australia. It's a 5-star review. It's by MT Pato. MT Pato says, "Hi guys, love the pod. Being an NBA fan who works long hours here in Australia driving trucks, it's great to have a podcast that is both informative and entertaining. Keep up the good work."
You know what's funny is somebody left us a note on our Facebook page that said he really likes to listen to our podcast while he's on the school bus. Mm-hmm. So people must like to listen to us while they're in vehicles.
I mean, honestly, it makes sense just in general. I mean, I know for me, if I'm going on a long road trip, I mean, it's better with timely ones or ones that are timeless, I guess I should say. But, you know, I load up podcasts because it's great. You know, for example, if I'm driving home to Pennsylvania, it's 13 hours away from Jacksonville. I'm just not going to listen to 13 hours of music. It's not going to happen. It would get repetitive. So you throw on a pod and all of a sudden, you know, the episode's over. Oh, crap. I just killed an hour. That's great.
It is really nice. My gym has really bad Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. It does. Your gym has no service at all.
Have you been to the Y?
Oh, it's at the Y. I forgot you go to the Y now. Oh, never mind. Your old gym had like zero service.
So the Wi-Fi at the Y is really bad. And because of that, I can't listen to podcasts. But I always listen to podcasts, my basketball podcast, when I was working out. And it's this whole new conundrum I'm having of like not having time now to listen to the basketball podcast I used to.
It is a conundrum, man. And it's kind of ironic that the Y doesn't have good Wi-Fi.
Yeah, don't you think?
A bit. But thank you, MT Pato. We appreciate it. I'm glad we make your truck driving a little bit easier. I'm glad we can help you get through your work day, but why don't we do some news?
Oh, hold on. I just dropped an Alanis Morissette reference and you didn't get it.
I didn't.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, Jeff Hornacek has been offered the New York Knicks head coaching job. They're just trying to figure out the contract. As you know, Hornacek was fired by the Phoenix Suns in February after the team underwent significant roster turnover. Hornacek was also a candidate to replace Luke Walton as assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors. Mike D'Antoni has emerged as the frontrunner to become the next head coach of the Houston Rockets. The Rockets have begun looking at the market to see some possible top assistant coaches to join D'Antoni. Speaking of D'Antoni, the Philadelphia 76ers are leaning towards selecting Ben Simmons with the first overall pick. Apparently, they will consider Brandon Ingram, but they have confidence in the upside of Simmons. Simmons was born and raised in Australia, where the Sixers' Director of Performance Research and Development, David T. Martin, was an iconic sports science leader until leaving to come to Philly. Brett Brown also coached Simmons' father. Manu Ginobili said he's going to take his time in deciding his future, whether or not he will stay in the NBA. Ginobili says he plans to meet with Popovich and Tim Duncan and some other players to discuss where they stand. And lastly, in your news, Frank Vogel is considered the Magic's top choice for head coach. A report from the Central Florida Sports Network says Frank Vogel is the Magic's top coach, and they're already discussing the terms of the contract. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
Wanted to take a second to talk to you guys about our first sponsor, SeatGeek. I got a little story. This past weekend, obviously, you know, TPC was in town and we live in Jacksonville. We were trying to go and we were able to get three tickets, but not four. There was four of us trying to go. My buddy went to SeatGeek. He downloaded the SeatGeek app and he typed in the promo code DISH because they are sponsoring with us. And if you type in the promo code DISH in the top right of your phone, once you download the SeatGeek app, you can save $20 off your first ticket. So we ended up going to TPC for about $40 total. And what SeatGeek is a ticket buying service. You can see exactly where you're buying the tickets if it's going to be in a stadium. It'll be a green dot if it's a good price. It'll be a red dot if it's a bad price. So you can stay away from it. It also has a stadium view, so you can see exactly what you'll see when you get there. All you got to do is download the SeatGeek app, type in the promo code DISH. And if all of that was too much for you to follow, just go to driveanddishpodcast.com. You can see exactly how to enter in that promo code. driveanddishpodcast.com. Show SeatGeek you enjoy the Drive and Dish podcast.
So it's been a tough year for a lot of fans. Basically every fan base that didn't make the playoffs, you know, it was a tough year. And it comes a time of the year when all the fans that aren't fans of teams in the playoffs get a little bit of excitement and get to be rewarded for having to have put up with whatever disastrous season that they just had to witness from their team. And I'm sitting up last night, and all of a sudden I get a barrage of texts. I'm listening to it on Sirius, actually, and they aren't giving me the play-by-play as it's happening. They sum it all up at the end. And I get a barrage of texts from Justin and Kevin, who, if I didn't know them better, I would have thought they had just drank six bottles of wine.
Dude, I was punch drunk and excited. You have no idea. Look. I mean, yeah, I guess we might as well start this off by saying the Sixers got the number one pick. The process, rest in peace, Sam Hinkie, has finally paid dues.
What a shame to it. That's what I was thinking about too when I'm like, they got the number one pick after ousting Hinkie.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, it's still kind of fuck our owners. Like, I'm not very happy about it. I still don't like our management. I'm still irritated with how that went down. But I want, getting the one pick, it validates Hinkie a bit, especially if it turns into the superstar that we all hope it will. It you know, you feel happy for a guy like Brett Brown, who's coached this team for the last 3 years. You feel happy for a guy like Nerlens Noel, who's been there for 3 years of awful. And just, you know, it seems like a page is turned.
Now, I wish
Hinkie was there to see it.
The number one pick isn't going to be a big.
It is not going to be a big.
Which is really helpful to you guys because, oh my God, you don't need the number one pick to be a big.
No, we don't need the number one pick to be a big. It's either going to be Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons, which we'll have a whole lot of time to talk about. A lot of you guys have hit me up asking me who my pick is, and honestly, I go back and forth all this all the time. Simmons' potential is just, there's so much. He oozes potential. He could truly be great. But there's all sorts of red flags going up in my head against Ben Simmons. So I think, Tim, if you held a shotgun to my head right now, I would say I'm taking Brandon Ingram. We have a lot of time to talk about that, but I guess we should recap the order. The Sixers are going to
Hold on. Before we start recapping the order, is it concerning that the best college player wasn't able to get his team into a tournament? And this isn't like into a best of 16. This is a best of 64.
Yeah.
And basketball being the one sport where one individual player can really make a difference, probably more so than any other sport that I can think of, is basketball. And the fact that Ben Simmons couldn't, and I don't watch enough basketball to know. I haven't watched that many Ben Simmons games.
Well, college
games.
At least.
Yeah, the college. Like, I haven't watched that much college to know whether or not Ben Simmons is really that good, but is that in and of itself concerning about his
self? Yeah, it's a red flag I have. Ben Simmons' second half of the season, he just wasn't that great. He came out absolutely on fire, and he kind of fell off. And there are concerns about Ben Simmons that, you know, we'll get into. And I don't want to downplay the kid. If Ben Simmons goes one to us, I'm still going to be really happy. I've said all along this is a two-person draft, honestly, in my opinion. Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram, at least in my opinion right now, are the only two true game changers. I think there are some other nice players in this draft. But honestly, like, if you're a lotto team, this is not really the draft to hope you have a lot of picks for. It's just not that great.
Well,
up and down, even from 3 to 14, there's no guy that really jumps off the page.
Okay, so referring to, I was thinking about this because I've heard you say that about this draft, and again, I don't watch that much college ball. Let's take a player like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is a really solid NBA player. Yeah. He's never going to be a star. He's never going to be the best player on an NBA championship run, but he's a player that any team would be happy that they have. So when you say that 3 through 15 isn't going to be that good, do you mean that there aren't any MKGs in the draft, or do you mean that there aren't any LeBron Jameses in the draft? Like, what do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is I think there are two players who have the potential to be really great. I think you can get some role players and some solid NBA players, but in terms of, you know, we look at last year's draft. I can point to multiple guys who already have made an instant impact on their team and look to be big parts of their team going forward. Guys like Porzingis, guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, who we're going to talk about, guys like Okafor, guys like Devin Booker, guys like Willie Cauley-Stein, and guys like Justice Winslow, who are already making instant contributions. And that's going down the list. With this draft, I don't really know how many of these guys are going to even be rotation players, it seems like, at times. There's a little bit of guard depth at the top. I think Jamal Murray and Chris Dunn can both be solid players. I think Dragan Bender is the best foreign prospect who I think should go pretty high. He's third on my board right now. But it's just from top to bottom, I think the quality of players in this draft just pales, especially to the last two.
Well, the last
2013.
The last two have just been ridiculous,
no,
especially
absolutely.
Last year. I mean, last year might... I don't remember a draft with more solid players than we got last year, except for... And our listeners are going to make fun of me for this, but the one that Dwayne Wade and LeBron James came out of, what year was that?
03.
03. That one right there, super stacked. I can't remember another draft, and it's only a year in, but there seems to be so many good players out of last year's draft.
Yeah, in my opinion, 03, 97, and 83 are just the best drafts in NBA history. If you look at top to bottom, I mean, obviously 03 is the recency bias, but if you look back at 03, four of the first five picks are LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. Like, holy crap.
No, Dario Saric, man.
Oh, yeah, Dario. What, isn't he kickboxing now?
He's a farmer.
Oh, well, that's cool. I'm not going to hate on farming. It's a valuable life. It's a valuable tool, I should say, for humanity. We wouldn't be here without the farmers.
You know who's also a farmer?
Who?
Bill Berry.
You made that up, didn't you?
No.
Who is Bill Berry?
He's a drummer. He's the ex-drummer from REM.
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah. So anyway, summing up the draft for you, number 14, the Chicago Bulls.
That's rough. That's rough. I mean, you can't really...
I mean, that's what you get for being first out.
Yeah, it's just one of those situations. But at the end of the day, the Bulls, you know, the Bulls have talent. You still got Jimmy Butler. You know, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, it's pretty unfortunate when you're when they had playoff expectations and you just miss. I mean, 14 isn't really, you know, much to write home about.
Number 13, the Phoenix Suns. This is via the Washington Wizards trade. So this is essentially what the Suns are getting for Markieff Morris.
Yeah, it's not your main pick. I think 13. I mean, where'd you guys draft Keith at?
Like 13, I think.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, you basically broke even. And it's a supplemental pick. You have a higher pick, which we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah. Number 12 was the Utah Jazz. I kind of felt bad for the Jazz on this one, but again, that's what you get for being first out. You get that middle-of-the-road pick. Number 11, Orlando Magic. A bit lower than they've been. Than they picked in a while.
Yeah, and that's one of the concerning, you know, I was having a conversation with him this morning, and he was, you know, harping about being in the middle and being in that no man's land. And, you know, the Magic have a lot of nice players, and you hope that they can, you know, supplement someone else in there. But, you know, and you're also still kind of looking for that game breaker if you're Orlando and doesn't really have it. You're not going to get it. Well, I don't want to say you're not going to get it at 11. There's been some great players drafted 11, word to Paul George, but...
Klay Thompson went in 11 too, right?
He did.
Mm-hmm. Milwaukee Bucks going in number 10. Yep. This one, I didn't realize that the Denver Nuggets, or excuse me, I didn't realize that the Toronto Raptors had the Denver Nuggets pick this year. So they get the number 9 pick, and considering that the Toronto Raptors are in the Eastern Conference Finals, getting the number 9 pick is huge.
Well, it could be big too. You know, we talk about DeRozan potentially leaving. You got to start to bring
DeRozan's
some young
leaving.
Guys. You don't, what?
DeRozan's not leaving.
Why do you think he's not leaving?
Because who else are the Toronto Raptors going to pay?
No, the Lakers are going to throw a max at him.
Yeah, but they have his bird rights.
Yeah. And
I mean,
true.
Like, there's nobody else to pay in as a
no,
free agent.
No, I'm still not
summer.
Giving DeRozan a max.
That's fine, but you got to pay somebody, so you might as well pay DeRozan. Number 8, the Sacramento Kings, where I feel like they picked every year.
Well, they're glad that they kept the pick, for one. If it had been out of the top 10, if they had got bounced, they would have lost it. Grade A tweet from the Kings last night, because they have the pick swap with the Sixers, and the Sixers got the one pick, and the Sacramento Kings tweeted, they say, hey Sixers, how are you still feeling about that pick swap? Golden tweeting.
Did the Sixers tweet him back?
Yeah, of course. They said, new phone, who dis?
Oh, that's hilarious. Number 7, Denver Nuggets via the New York Knicks.
Yeah. There was a tweet I saw earlier, and I'll have to find it and retweet it on our account. Follow us on Twitter at @DriveAndDishNBA. But there was a top 5 of the players that have been picked with New York Knicks and Brooklyn Nets picks that have been traded, and it is undoubtedly a playoff team, like a solid playoff team.
I mean, it's just depressing.
Yeah, it is pretty depressing. But they got Porzingis, so that's cool.
Coming in 6 is the Pelicans. So the Pelicans will get somebody to pair with Anthony Davis. I feel like you had mentioned, Kevin, that a lot of the top prospects outside of the number 2 are point guards, and given their Drew Holiday issues, injury issues, that's, you know, maybe they'll get a point guard to match with Anthony Davis.
Yeah, if you can get somebody that slips, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, Jamal Murray, Chris Dunn could both still be on the board. Mentioned them a bit earlier.
Minnesota Timberwolves coming in at number 5. Like, how many top picks is this team?
They got Towns and Wiggins. Like, geez, oh man, you don't even need to hit a home run when you got Karl Anthony Towns.
You just need somebody that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Number 4, the Phoenix Suns, as Kevin had mentioned, Kevin mentioning, a lot of these guys are guards. The Phoenix Suns don't need a point guard. I wouldn't be surprised if the Phoenix Suns try to trade up to where the Lakers are, or if they can't do that and they trade down. I wouldn't be surprised with that as well.
Yeah, it's funny. Obviously, this is not ideal. It reminds me of the situation the Sixers were kind of in last year, when you just had big men, were the best players available. And I think the Suns are still in a position where you take best player available. Honestly, you could sell me on taking a point guard to pair with Devin Booker, have them to grow, have that be your backcourt of the future, grow together, and kind of move on from Bledsoe and Brandon Knight if you can get value out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with you on moving on from Bledsoe. The knees are a concern, but Bledsoe is an amazing player, so we'll see how that works out for him. Number 3, the Boston Celtics via the Brooklyn Nets. Boston Celtics, man, getting another high draft pick.
Well, at least it wasn't 1 or 2, and you're the Nets, and you're like, oh, we just gave them Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons. But I mean, I'd imagine the Celtics are going to take Bender here, who's, you know, he may not come over this season, so that could be something to watch. But again,
might even be good for the Celtics.
Yeah, because Lord knows, I don't think they have any roster spots available at this point. You know, one of the interesting things that Boston is going to do is, we want to see what they're going to do with all those assets, and, you know, who stays, who goes, who they decide is a part of this team going forward. And but they got to do something because they have a lot of draft picks, a lot of young guys, and decisions got to get made with this team going forward.
Number two is the Los Angeles Lakers. Rumors are that they will be trading that pick. They just have no interest in rebuilding.
Yeah, we've had fun at the expense of the Lakers, but I mean, realistically, they're in a pretty good position right now. You have the number two overall pick. You have D'Angelo Russell. You have Jordan Clarkson. You have assuming you re-sign Clarkson, you have Julius Randle. So if the Lakers want to make a play for a superstar, you kind of have the package to build to hit that home run and go for it. Or you add Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons to your lineup to bolster a young core. And you got to be sitting pretty good if you're the Lakers right now. I think they're in a win-win situation.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just too bad that they didn't extend Byron Scott's contract.
Oh, yeah. They would have been right back at that number two pick next year.
Hey, man, got to rebuild. Number one, the 76ers.
Bless up, baby. That's all I can say. Thank God. Last year's the worst year of basketball of all time for me. I needed this.
Dude, if you guys are going to tank for this long, you deserve the number one pick eventually.
Yeah.
Now that you've gotten the number one pick, I just want you guys to just stop tanking.
Well,
You've gotten enough picks. Get some players. Stop tanking. Like, I'm tired of it.
But that's what it was, though. That was always the thing, is that it was never going to really go beyond this year. Last year was supposed to be the year. The pick didn't work out. Embiid obviously hasn't played. But this is the year that, realistically, the Sixers are supposed to turn the corner and start winning games. Like, I don't want to see them tank anymore either. I've had enough losses in the last 3 years for a lifetime, it seems like. So
once you get the number one pick, I just don't want to see you in the lottery.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like every team you get a number one pick, disappear for a while.
Well, they'll still be in the lottery. It just won't be in contention for one, hopefully. I mean, ideally, with Dario playing this year, if Embiid is healthy, with one of these guys in the lineup, with Nerlens and Ja still there, with Covington still there, it shouldn't be as bad this year. It should be a whole lot better, actually. I think the Sixers can make tangible improvements this year.
So the Rookie of the Year voting came in, and much like the MVP, it was unanimous.
Yeah, I mean, no surprise here. We hyped this guy a lot. Karl-Anthony Towns is your unanimous Rookie of the Year. What else is there to say about the guy? The sky is the limit for this dude. He just probably the best rookie season since LeBron James and Tim Duncan. I think he averaged 18 and 10. He can do it all. He can hit the three. He's a dominant defender.
He's good off the dribble, his footwork in the post.
Yeah. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns is unquestionably the Rookie of the Year. They should be unanimous. And that's saying something when we've talked about how good this draft class is, that he's so much better than all these guys that it is unanimous. And like I just said, it should have been unanimous. Karl-Anthony Towns, unquestionably the Rookie of the Year. The voters got this right. The writers got this right. What else is there to say? I think the kid is going to be a superstar for years to come. He's already this good at 19 years old. Like, what is he going to do when he gets 25 and 26 and hits his prime?
Yeah, the Timberwolves with two consecutive Rookie of the Years. So it's really, really big for the Timberwolves. Obviously, they're in a good place. Karl-Anthony Towns joined only Damian Lillard, Blake Griffin, and David Robinson, and Ralph Sampson, but all the way back in 1983-84 as the only unanimous Rookie of the Year vote getters.
Yeah, Ralph Sampson was great. He's a really underrated player, and just a few issues kind of derailed his career a little bit, and it's a shame. We'll have, once we hit the summertime, we can kind of talk about those teams. Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon could have been a really, really fun team for a while and kind of challenged those Celtics and Lakers teams that just dominated the 80s and the Pistons towards the end.
So we've talked a bit about Ben Simmons, and the concern with Ben Simmons is that once he got to the second half of the season, his collegiate career, that the dude kind of fell off. And when a lot of people talk about the rookie wall, what they're talking about is the fact that these players are, for the first time in their lives, playing basketball games every single day. You know, what do they play in college? Like 20 games or something? And even that's a little bit much, maybe.
Yeah, it's more than that. It's like 30.
Right. Whereas in the pros, you're playing 82. So a lot of the times what happens, when you look at Porzingis, how the second half of the season he wasn't playing as much. You look at Ja, who had to be rested a bit, is that their bodies simply aren't used to that kind of schedule and putting that much strain on their bodies. Well, Karl-Anthony Towns was one of six players last year to start all 82 games.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I mean, we can keep talking about this guy for days. He's something special. The Timberwolves, I mean, as great as Wiggins is, and I think Wiggins can be, Carl Anthony Towns is the gem of that team right now. He is just so damn good.
Oh, he's so much better than Wiggins. I want to go down the rest of the rookie voting. Number one was Towns. Number two was Porzingis. Porzingis got a few more votes than I actually thought he would. Jokic over with the Nuggets came in three. Devin Booker number four and Okafor number five.
It seems pretty fair. There's nothing really that stands out as egregious. I mean, I think Porzingis obviously got the hype of that first start. I think he started.
I think he did too. I think that was all first half.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it was. I think Okafor was the same way. I think he was a lot more first half, and then, you know, Okafor got hurt and punched a dude in Boston, and just, you know, things happened. I think Devin Booker probably didn't get more consideration because he was more of a late bloomer. You know, that's really when his playing time increased.
Yeah,
in the second half of the year.
I mean, that was a Devin Booker didn't get the playing time until injuries really befell the Suns. So that's why he came in fourth. As far as Porzingis, though, like, I just feel like people forget the dude didn't play like the last 2 months of the season.
Yeah. But it's also even that New York hype.
Like, when he wasn't playing, or when he was playing the last 2 months of the season, wasn't all that good.
No.
Not that I'm not big on the kid. I just, like, I don't know. I would have rather had Jokic be number two. Obviously, I would have put Booker number two over Porzingis. I'm really big on Porzingis. I feel like people forgot how good he wasn't the entire second half of the season.
Well, how much of Jokic, too, do you think was a lot of people just not watching him? Because, I mean, Jokic plays in Denver. I mean, I'll self-admit that Denver is probably the team that I watch the least of year in and year out.
I would say, for me, it's the Nets. I have a really hard time watching the Nets.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go out of my way to watch the Nets.
I want to watch the Nets.
Well, and that helps in my case, too, in terms of seeing the Nets more, is just for the fact that, like, I mean, we're East Coast guys. Denver plays on Mountain Time. You know, I'm oftentimes not awake when Denver's on television.
Yeah, no, that happens for sure. I want to go over some coaching stuff that's happened. You and I talked about this a little bit off the mic this morning, but the Rockets have had a second to interview with Mike D'Antoni.
And Tim said to me off the mic, he goes, because obviously Tim has the most experience with D'Antoni being a Phoenix Suns fan, but Tim goes, if you're going to have James Harden, you might as well have a coach that just doesn't play defense and go all offense. And it kind of makes sense in this case.
Yeah, it does. Completely. Like, as long as you're going to have a team that doesn't play defense, I mean, it's not just James Harden, but James Harden being the catalyst of a team that doesn't play defense. Shout out to Patrick Beverley, though, for sure. It seems like Mike D'Antoni is just a perfect fit for James Harden. And we've had the debate on the show before. Do you get a coach for the players, or do you get the players for the coach? And I feel like if you have a star like James Harden, that you get a coach for the player.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, 7 seconds of or less offense could very well work for this. You know, we know Harden's a guy who likes the ball in his hands, and he certainly can put the numbers up on offense. So it'd be interesting. I don't think D'Antoni is as bad of a coach as his rep has entailed the last few years. I don't think he's necessarily the best coach available.
Mike D'Antoni inspired the Warriors offense.
Yeah, but it's got to translate. I mean, the fact of the matter is...
Well, it did translate.
Well, he wasn't that great in New York, though, is what I'm saying. But I feel like he's a better coach anymore than he gets credit for. So, I mean, his offense was revolutionary at the time. The problem is it's not that time anymore. A lot of teams know how to counter that offense. Suns teams back in the mid-2000s were some of my favorite teams to watch in terms of pure entertainment. It's still kind of mind-blowing that they never won a title. Shout out to Robert Horry for hip-checking Steve Nash and probably blowing that opportunity in 07.
Moving on.
Sorry, pal.
The Pacers, and this I found to be a funny move, is that from everything I'd heard is that they weren't really happy with the pace that the Pacers were playing, pun intended there. So that's part of the reason why they got rid of Frank Vogel. And then so they gave the nod to assistant coach Nate McMillan, a 3-year deal. He coached the Supersonics and the Trailblazers, 12 years experience, really great. I appreciate the fact that they are keeping with continuity, but Nate ran some of the slowest offensive pace teams of anybody when he was a coach. Like, his teams consistently were within the 26th to the 30th range. It's like you're just extending Frank Vogel.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't really get it either. If history stays true to form, then he'll probably get fired in 3 years the way Rick Carlisle and Frank Vogel both did. But, you know, I mean, it's an okay hire. I don't think it's, you know, you promote from internally, so there's obviously the perks with that. He's familiar with the system. He's familiar with the players. You assume he has some sort of relationship with Paul George, which if you're indie is the most important thing to keep. I'm not really inspired by it, though. And to your point, if they're looking to go faster, it doesn't make sense. I don't really get why the Pacers in this case are trying to go faster. You know, I'm a big proponent of pace and space. I think you know that, and we've had many discussions on this. But I also don't think that every team needs to run. And I know you're going to throw back at me Randy Whitman and the Wizards, but Randy Whitman, I just don't think was a good coach and used the offense well, where in this case, I don't understand. You know, Indy's strength was based off their defense. And I don't really know why you want to change that now when you don't have the personnel there. I mean, I guess you have Monta Ellis and Paul George who can definitely both get buckets, but that's not what got you to the playoffs.
I think part of this, Nate was able to develop LaMarcus Aldridge, and I think that they're really hoping that he can do the same with Miles Turner. I kind of feel bad for the Pacers. Larry Bird said he's an old school guy, and he appreciated that about him. It seems like this is more of a they're keeping continuity, which I appreciate. It's not like they promoted an assistant coach who doesn't have experience. They obviously want to keep developing Miles Turner, and I can appreciate that. I just think they could have done all this without firing Frank Vogel.
Yeah. I mean, that's at the end of the day, I go back to that. I understand that Vogel's offense was questionable in late game situations sometimes, but I don't think it was necessary. It didn't make sense after last year. I'm going to stand by that. If you're going to get rid of Frank Vogel, you should have done it when they couldn't get past the Heat and then really fell off the next year, not after they overachieve.
Yeah, no, I agree. Terry Sotts, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's about time he got an extension, which we really never thought he was going anywhere anyway. But Portland's got to lock this guy up. Should have been, if there wasn't a record-breaking performance, he's my no-doubt coach of the year last year. He did incredible things with that lineup, where after four of their starters went away, and we talked about this a lot, he really
it's
got a lot of CJ
80% of their starting lineup.
That is math there.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you can do fractions.
I just think it's more impactful when you say 80% of their starting lineup than four of their starters.
Well, it's four or five.
Right.
I think basketball fans get it.
Yeah, but I just feel like it's more impactful.
But do we not assume that our basketball fans have a higher intellect and understanding? But yeah, good move for Portland. I think you want to keep building off what you did last year. I think there's a lot to look forward to in Portland. Again, they really defied our expectations all season long. Probably the biggest surprise of the season to me. I think Terry Stotts deserved an extension. He's a hell of a coach.
The big question going into the offseason for Portland is, can you attract any free agents? You know, and that's a big test for them because it's not like any of their younger players, apart from CJ McCollum and maybe Alan Crabb, you know, but like even that's not really inspiring stuff. But it seems like anybody that they can really develop, they aren't going to be able to develop any stars for so the test for the franchise now is whether or not you can land a big free agent.
Well, they have a ton of assets. You know, they've really been set up well to spend. Obviously, you know, every team is going to have money, but Portland really has put themselves. I mean, the only teams that are equivalent to flexibility in terms of Portland, I should say, are like Boston and the Sixers. So I think there's a lot that Portland can do there. I do agree that, you know, Portland hasn't necessarily been the marquee free agent destination in the past few years. But I also think when you have a backcourt of Dame and CJ, they're really well coached. They're really well GM'd. They're pretty good at developing talent, that maybe that can make a push. You know, NBA players, for the most part, are more in tune with winning and winning situations and knowing that they can make their money regardless. And, you know, they don't have to be in L.A. They don't have to be in New York. You can, you know, look at Greg Monroe last year, who turned down New York to go to Milwaukee.
Well, tell that to Ben Simmons.
Well, we're not going to keep talking about Ben Simmons, but players are aware of where they can win. And I think that Portland may have some of that, more of that juice this year to attract free agents than they might have in the past.
I hope so, too.
Everybody's going to get paid, so I don't think money is as much of an issue as it could be in the past.
You know what they say, the more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Want to know a little secret about education? It'll improve your sex life.
It's random NBA player highlights on the Drive-A-Dish podcast.
Today's random NBA player, Andre Lee Robertson. He was born December 4th, 1991. He is a three-year pro for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He went to college at University of Colorado Boulder. In his 3 years at University of Colorado Boulder, he was one of the country's top rebounders, finishing third in 2011-2012 and second in 2012-2013. He led the Buffaloes to an NCAA tournament both those years. As a junior, in 2012-2013 year, he averaged 11 points and 11 rebounds. He was named All-Pac-12 Conference Defensive Player of the Year. He then declared for the draft. He was the 26th overall pick in the 2013 draft taken by the Minnesota Timberwolves, but was immediately traded to the Oklahoma City Thunder on draft night. He had an impressive summer league performance and signed with the Thunder and bounced between the Tallulah 66ers and playing for Oklahoma City for his first year. In the summer of 2014, Roberson rejoined the Thunder for their 2014 summer league and impressed them so much they extended his rookie contract. He then got the start for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He recorded his first career double-double, 10 points and 12 rebounds, on December 18th against the Golden State Warriors. He then scored a career-high 12 points on February 9th for the Denver Nuggets, which was actually just beaten last week in their last playoff game against the Spurs. His father, John Robertson, played 12 years professionally overseas along the side of Dirk Nowitzki. That's your random NBA player for the week, Andre Robertson. Hey, we wanted to take a second and talk to you about our second sponsor, Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It'll cost you less than $20 a month, and you'll get 6 to 8 items. And they're all licensed, so you know you're getting the real deal. It could be apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, many, many more. You have until the 19th of every single month, and obviously the 19th just passed, so you're going to have to stay tuned for the next box. It's pretty cool. You can pick a few different crates. You got Loot Crate, you got Loot Crate DX, Loot Anime, Loot Gaming, Loot Pets, which is honestly my favorite. You can get matching tees for pups and humans, you know, because you want to match with your dog and or cat. We're not judging. And we have a way that we can totally hook you guys up. You just have to go to lootcrate.com/driveanddish. And once you're there, enter the code driveanddish, and you'll be able to save up to $3 off. And if you go to driveanddishpodcast.com, we have instructions on how to get that $3 off in case you missed it. Go to driveanddishpodcast.com. You'll find out there.
But you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Ray views Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. Like us on Facebook. Just search Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
So Justin put up on our Instagram this really funny picture. One was about the Western Conference Finals, and it had these, and I wish I knew comic books better. I don't. Whatever. It had these two Avenger guys going at it.
Dude, come on. Iron Man and Captain America, you don't know who either of them are. That's not even like, you don't even need to be a comic book nerd to understand that. And if you subscribe to Loot Crate, like which Justin just talked about there, then you will get gifts from Marvel. Did you see Captain America Civil War?
No.
Dude, go see it.
No.
Why?
I don't like superhero movies.
Oh, boy.
I'm watching them my whole life.
But you don't need to be a superhero
it.
Fan to enjoy the newest run of Marvel movies.
Yeah, I just don't care, man.
I'm not telling you to go see Batman versus Superman.
Well, good, because I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have missed much.
Right.
A lot of action, like zero plot.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that's basically the Eastern Conference Finals, right?
Yeah, yeah. That is a really good way to describe the Eastern Conference Finals. Boy, I watched a good chunk of the Cleveland Raptors game until it just got completely out of hand. Oh, God. The Cavaliers, my favorite tweet that I saw last night was, I would have picked the Cavs in 3 if it was possible. I mean, it's just, it's not a fair fight. And on top of it, you got Kyle Lowry, who kind of threw some shade at LeBron the other day. LeBron just was unstoppable in the paint last night. I mean, I think he took one jump shot the entire game. He just completely put his will on the game. The dude dunked so hard he put an indent in the basketball. Kyrie Irving has totally elevated his game. I know you're not a huge Kyrie fan, but Kyrie has really, really been fun to watch in these playoffs. The Cavs,
his handles.
The Raptors, he does have great handles. The Raptors basically said, we're not going to let Cleveland beat us from 3, which is the way they've been winning these games. And so Cleveland, in turn, just absolutely blitzed them in the interior. Just totally took their lunch money. Their guards were getting beat off the ball left and right. The help defense wasn't there in time. And credit to Toronto. I was hating on Toronto in their playoff performance a little bit. Great job, guys. You made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. We might as well just hit the fast forward button on this series. I'm going to get hot takey, and I know that we shouldn't do that after the way the Spurs just totally mollywopped the Thunder in game one of last series. Still made it, but the Thunder came back and won that series. Give me Cleveland in the finals. Toronto, hats off. You reached your expectations. You did what you needed to do this season. But Cleveland is just on another level. They're just way better than Toronto. It wasn't even close last night. It looked like a varsity team playing a JV team.
It was hats off to Toronto. It's been 20 years since they've made it this far.
It's history. It's the first time they've ever made it to the ECF. This is big for Toronto. I don't want to downplay Toronto. They just aren't even on the same. They're not in the same breath as Cleveland.
Well, we've been, you know, the whole season, I just thought it's going to be Cleveland against the Warriors. And I still think it'll be Cleveland against the Warriors. But I was really hoping that we just get a competitive. I mean, Cleveland has gone. They've won their first 9 playoff games in the playoffs and matches some records and stuff. Not that that matters, but they're undefeated and they're playing their best. If Cleveland would have been playing like this the entire season,
mm-hmm.
I would have been so much higher on Cleveland in my brackets. But the fact is they weren't. There were so many stretches during the season where we talked about how vulnerable Cleveland looked, how they weren't playing all that well. But I think Cleveland got 9 days of rest before playing the Raptors. The Raptors had 1 day to prep for Cleveland.
Yeah, and I think
you look at Damari Carroll, right? Who the Raptors got Damari Carroll to be the LeBron James stopper. Damari Carroll's been injured. I think he was like 1 of 5, a -19 when he was on the court. And they got 1 day of rest, and Cleveland got 9.
Yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely a factor. And Cleveland is undoubtedly playing their best basketball of the season right now. I mean, they have totally turned it on. What I saw last night was a team that has been here before, led by a player in LeBron James who's now probably going to go to 6 straight finals, which is just outrageous if you think about it. We haven't really seen anything like that since Jerry West, or because Jordan had the 2 years off, so I'm not counting Jordan, but you look at a guy like Jerry West or Bill Russell all the way back in the day. It's just I'm gonna watch this series. I think it'll be a little more competitive, but Cleveland just looks like they've even elevated beyond the first 2 series where they were 8-0. I mean, I'm going to say it now. I think they're 12-0 going into the finals.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say that you had to draft a player. You're the GM of a team. You have to draft a player. And you can either draft LeBron James or Steph Curry. Who do you pick?
Where are we talking? Like in 2016, or are we talking, and like, are we talking for one season?
Right now. You just looking at the players, you see the potential of LeBron. We know what he is. We've seen the potential of Curry. We know what Curry is. If you knew that potential and you had to draft one of those players number one overall as a GM, who would you draft?
This is hard. This is really, because I think LeBron can take over the way. I'm going to say Steph because of this season and the way that he just can't miss this season.
Really, my answer when I asked myself that question was LeBron all the way. Like, it wasn't even close.
I kind of think it's LeBron only because, like, I look at last year when Love and Irving got hurt. And I guess you ask yourself, do you see Steph Curry doing what LeBron did last year? Getting your team within 2 wins of the finals basically by yourself. I'm not convinced Steph Curry can do that.
Well, we've never seen Steph Curry lift a crappy team. Not that he couldn't, but we've never seen him lift a crappy team. But we've seen LeBron lift teams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at his first run in Cleveland, and that was basically the definition of his time was lifting teams.
Even some of those Miami Heat teams, while he had stars with him, the supporting cast around, because they didn't have any money left, you know, they were basically taking veterans at the end of their contracts and stuff. They weren't amazing teams.
Oh, the year they lost the finals and to the Spurs, and even the year before that, I mean,
rolling out like Udonis Haslam and Mike Miller and stuff.
Right. Like, they were playing significant minutes in the finals. But yeah, I've been convinced. I'm going with LeBron. LeBron can just do so much more that I don't know that Steph can.
Well, because everyone's like, Steph's the best player in the world now, not LeBron. I mean, Steph just came in and like took the league from LeBron. But when I asked myself that question, how quick I went to LeBron, hats off to Steph, but I still think LeBron's the best player in the world.
Yeah, I think LeBron can elevate anyone around him. I haven't seen Steph do it. And that's not a disrespect to Steph. Like, Steph is the unquestioned MVP this year. I think he was the best player in the league this year.
As far as the MVP debate goes, though, we've seen how bad the Cavs are when LeBron sits.
Right.
Why wasn't LeBron more strongly considered?
Because the Cavs season was a mess. That's why. I think because the Cavs season was a mess and because I don't think the Cavs played their best basketball in the regular season. I think if they had played like they're playing right now the whole regular season, I think it would have been a much bigger discussion. I still don't think it would have happened because, look, you got to pick the best player on a team that broke the wins record. You have to, as far as I'm concerned. And Curry was that good this year.
Well, we've seen the Warriors win without Steph on the court, and we saw the Cavs get demolished without LeBron James. I don't want to bring up this debate, but I do think that Jerry Colangelo and others had a point in saying LeBron should have been the MVP.
Yeah, I think it's valid. And I mean, honestly, I don't want to go as far as to say Cleveland is the favorite. I'm still picking Golden State. They're the team to beat. But
oh, whoever wins 73 games in that season is the favorite.
Is the favorite. Like, and I'm not backing off the Warriors, but like I said, this finals has the potential to be a whole lot more interesting than I think both of us would have billed it 2 months ago.
I'm just really happy for it. If OKC beats the Warriors, and I don't think that they're going to, but I think that that could be a really compelling matchup too. And I was trying to figure out, so I was thinking about it, I'm like, if you're the Cavs and you go undefeated through the playoffs, you must be riding so high on yourself. And then I thought, but if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder and you just knock off the best Spurs team that the Spurs have ever had and then beat the Warriors, how high are you feeling about yourself, regardless of the amount of adversity you fought through to win those series? Both teams would just... the confidence level from both teams would be out the door.
Well, and make no bones about it. They want each other. Cleveland wants to avenge that. And you know LeBron wants nothing more in life than to bring Cleveland a championship and end that city's drought and truly be, I mean, he's already probably, other than Jim Brown, is probably the best athlete to ever play in Cleveland. He would totally elevate. He's already probably there, but he would truly like elevate to God status if he breaks that drought in Cleveland and in Northeast Ohio. And we mentioned a billion times with LeBron James, what he means to Northeast Ohio is bigger than basketball.
He'll have a Rocky statue, a Rocky-esque statue.
Oh, he's going to have it regardless, but...
it'll be bigger.
It will be bigger. And you know LeBron's throwing little jabs at Curry because LeBron's pissed he didn't win that MVP award. You know that is. And Curry is like, yo... I'm the MVP. My team broke the record. We're the defending champions. How are we not getting respect? God, if the Thunder get there too, I'm excited. Don't get me wrong. If it's Thunder Cavs, I'm equally as excited too because I love that KD LeBron matchup. And it's a matchup that I thought we were going to see again way back stemming from 2011. But
it's also a matchup that LeBron has won handedly.
Right. But I'm just... I want that Warriors Cavs matchup. I'm very, very okay and equally as excited if it's Thunder Cavs, but I need the rematch almost.
Were you I think everybody was a bit shocked that the Thunder ended up winning game one. Do you think that it's possible that Enes Kanter has come in and become the third best player on OKC above Serge Ibaka?
I don't want to go that far. I think I thought it was really good coaching by Billy Donovan, who continues to just really elevate his coaching game in the playoffs, to stick with Kanter. Because the Warriors wanted to go at Kanter early and expose him kind of defensively. And, you know, Billy Donovan could have pulled him from that game. And it kind of, you know, you never know what the confidence is going to be like if you're just getting toasted. And at the end of the day, Kanter came back. Had a really solid second half. I think he's been such a key addition for them. I'm not ready to call him the third best player because honestly, the way he's playing right now, I think Steven Adams is their third best player. But he's in that conversation. Ibaka has really dropped off the radar. We kind of talked about that a little bit last week, but it seems like he hasn't been in the spotlight nearly as much this year.
No, and through the playoffs too. I mean, you mentioned Billy Donovan's coaching, but there's a lot of times when he's rolling out Kanter and Adams instead of Kanter and Ibaka. And it seems like the OKC has been looking for a third scoring option on that team since they got rid of Harden, or since Harden left, depending on how you want to look at it. And it seems like they finally found one with Kanter. I mean, I was not a Kanter guy until this year, But I've really come along on Cantor. And as far as his defensive abilities, he is a really bad pick and roll defender. I mean, no joke. He's a really bad pick and roll defender.
And that's what they were trying to do with him. But they were trying to expose him off that every single time.
One-on-one, he's not that bad. He's a big, strong dude down low. And you can't really back him down. It's just when you put him in the pick and roll is where it becomes a bit iffy. And we spend all this time with saying someone's bad at defense as this blanket term. But I think maybe we need to start looking at aspects of defense rather than just blanket terming. Is that a word? I don't know. Anyway.
It is now.
All defense into one thing. And also, Deion Waiters, although he hasn't been incredibly effective offensively, he's turned into a lot better of a defender through this postseason run.
Yeah, I think they've got a lot of these guys step up. And I think Cantor wasn't a good fit defensively at all for what Utah was trying to do. I mean, the guy just, he didn't fit. Like, we saw Utah actively improve as soon as they traded him. But that doesn't mean, you know, just because one player, I mean, look at Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard wasn't really a thing in Indiana, and then he goes to San Antonio, and now he's second in the MVP voting. It's about fit a lot of times, too. Oklahoma City plays a game that allows Cantor to play to his abilities. He's always going to be an offensive guy first. He'll at best be an average defender, but that doesn't mean you can't make contributions. Not everybody is a God-level Tony Allen defender.
Looking at the East, and I agree with you, I'm just like, all right, Cleveland just win. I'm so happy for the Raptors and the Raptors fans. I think it's huge. You guys did it. You got past the first round. Cleveland's going to win. But when you look at the West, I find the matchup of small ball, that death ball lineup, versus OKC playing like the biggest basketball ever, the Twin Tower lineup, the Stash Bros, whatever you want to call it, the matchup between those two competing styles of basketball, really fascinating.
Well, I like that OKC is not playing small and trying to match Golden State. Like, no one is going to match Golden State in terms of playing small. And the one thing is, you know, if we put your boy Andre Roberson in the lineup, you know, your favorite player of all time, we're going to talk about him again on the show. When you have lineups with him and you choose to go away with the Cantor and the Steven Adams talk, you know, all of a sudden you can kind of put Draymond Green out there and not really have him guard Roberson, but kind of have him float around and just be the disruption that he is in the paint. And you won't have to face guard him. You know, it's
right.
Well,
that's what I mean, is they can quote unquote put Draymond Green on Roberson. And by that, I mean not guard Roberson at all and just hang around in the paint.
Right. And so it becomes an issue. Like, you're not going, it's just, you don't want to match the Warriors and go small. You don't want to play to the Warriors' abilities. Again, credit to Billy Donovan for sticking with his guns. It clearly isn't as good of a matchup with Cantor and Adams in the interior that it was against San Antonio. But I think they can be successful. And I think if you're Oklahoma City, you have to be pretty damn enthused after not only winning game one in Golden State, coming back the way you did, games that you were losing in the regular season, frankly. And on top of that, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook combined shot 30%. Your two best players who were fourth and fifth in MVP voting, shot 30% combined, and you still beat Golden State at home. You have to be feeling really good if you're Oklahoma City right now.
Well, Russell Westbrook went into the half in that first game, and I think he had shot like 1 for 10, and then he exploded and scored like 20. It was either 19 or 20 points in the third quarter.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of the shooting percentage comes from. But OKC was really able to take advantage on the offensive and the defensive glass, for that matter, when they kept their bigs in. Kevin Durant went on that stretch where I think he missed like four shots in a row right at the end of the fourth, but he was able to make a couple of big ones. And it was a really fun game, and the contrasting styles. I'm really excited for the West, and you know, Cleveland wins the East.
And again, you know, but we want to talk about the, you know, we've talked about Oklahoma City and they've just all their meltdowns in the fourth quarter. For as not great of a game as Kevin Durant had, to hit that last mid-range jumper with Andre Iguodala, one of the best defenders in the league, guarding you, that's a big boy shot. And Oklahoma City looks like they've hit that switch. I'm not saying they're going to beat Golden State, but boy, we're going to have some fun in this Western Conference Finals. Well, thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. Unfortunately, Mr. Cousart will be out of commission this weekend as well, so you are stuck with Tim and I for the next episode as well. So buckle up. We promise we won't. We'll try to crack some jokes once in a while to add the Justin effect back in. You know, we know the episodes aren't quite as good without all three of us, but hey, you gotta thrive and survive. And thank you everyone again for listening to this episode of the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. You can check out all our episodes on our website. It's actually been redone recently. Credit to Tim. He did a lot of great work on our website. So make sure you check that out at driveanddishpodcast.com. We're on iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we're on Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn. Basically, any podcast app you can think of, we're there. Also want to give a shout out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio who are kind enough to host and sponsor the show.
And if you are interested in either of our sponsors, whether that be SeatGeek or Loot Crate, just go to driveanddishpodcast.com. There's a sponsors tab at the top of the page, and I'll have all that info for you there. And if you sign up for either one of those sponsors, let us know. Send us a message on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever you want to do. Let us know, and we will give you a shout out on the show. You can add us on Twitter at @DriveAndDishNBA. If you're so inclined, you can add us individually on Twitter as well. I am at @RadioTimNBA. Justin is at JustinC on the air, and Kevin is at RefuseToLose. Also, we're on Instagram.
Yep, Drive and Dish Podcast. Check it out.
We are not on Snapchat, nor will we ever be.
I like Snapchat.
I do too. I just don't want to put the show on there.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
Be a star side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da 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 da. Hey. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Hey. Let's go while we're young.
All right. I think they get the point.